I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org, New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today is actually a very special show because it's actually going to be my last show that I'm going to be hosting. I've been hosting it since September 2004. Over 100 interviews, 100 episodes, and I've loved every minute of it. And this is it. This is my last episode. So what I've decided to do for my last episode is have a few past guests on, talk about some of their successes they've had since they were on Citywide. And I know I have a lot of great stories coming at you, and let's get right to them. Up first is going to be Boaz Frankel. Here we are on Citywide. This is the final episode. My friend Boaz Frankel, he is a TV host on the show Clips and Quips, and he got his start at NYU TV, hosting the show On the Cusp, and then he graduated and did his own show that broadcast to college campuses all across the U.S. here. And I know you've had a lot of great things happen for you since you've been on the show Citywide.
It's all thanks to Citywide, really.
I'm sure it is. That's, you know,
people
that's
heard it, and the phones would not stop ringing.
Thanks. And yes, but one of which is that you broke a world record. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
That's right. When I was back home in Portland, Oregon, I've been really into the high five for a long time. And so I sort of looked into sort of were there records, what's sort of been accomplished in the high five world. And there was a world record set a number of years ago by a British MTV presenter for most high fives in an hour. And so when I was back home in Portland, Oregon, I used to work at one of the TV stations there, so I called them up. I called up a lot of the radio stations, the newspapers, and I broke the world record for most high-fives in an hour. I shattered the previous record. I high-fived 408 people in an hour in Pioneer Square, which is sort of the central square in downtown Portland.
Hmm. Well, how did you accomplish this? It seems like, did you just kind of run around, or did you have people helping you, or what exactly?
Well, we got the publicity sort of out there, so a number of people who work in the offices around there came down, and then it's also a commuter hub, so a lot of the light rail trains stop there. So, you know, people are getting on and getting off. We had people high-fiving. We had a stamper there to ensure that people wouldn't high-five twice. There was a counter. It was a big event, big to-do, but it was a blast. And then a few weeks later, I had to compile all this information with witness letters and pictures and videos. Send it off to Guinness, and then I finally got my certificate from Guinness World Records, and it's hanging up on my wall.
Great. Well, congratulations with that.
Thank you very much.
I know it's great to hear that you're very motivated like that, and you're willing to put yourself out there like that.
It's true.
How else have you put yourself out there? I heard you did a pilot for a show.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine who I actually met when we were both contestants on this short-lived WB reality show called Studio 7, we really hit it off. Neither of us won the show, unfortunately, but we really got along together, and we've been talking a long time about doing something, so we finally got together and made this pilot of a show we call The Portable Talk Show, which is sort of like a fusion between talk show, sketch show. Essentially, it's a portable desk and chairs, and we take it wherever and set up a talk show. And we put together a sort of a short pilot. We're hoping maybe we could do, you know, turn it into a web show or something, and we send it out to some people, and like people from Fox Development called us back, and they really liked it. So I guess they're keeping an eye on us. They, you know, once we have some spec scripts, they want to look at those. And then the production company who produced Studio 7, the reality show we met on Embassy Row, also really likes it, and they're talking about developing it now. We're going to meet with them again and see what we can do with that, maybe, you know, turn it into some sort of online show.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with that then, Boaz.
Thanks a lot.
What else does the future hold for you?
Well, Clips and Quips looks like it's going to be winding down. It was a good run. We had 3 seasons. It's, you know, really doing a lot of exciting stuff on the website. We started up the Clips and Quips blog this year, which has been really exciting. In fact, in the last few days, we did something sort of fun. I'm really excited about Knocked Up, which is the new Judd Apatow movie. And he's the guy who wrote and directed 40-Year-Old Virgin. He produced Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared and Anchorman.
Very highly respected writer.
Yeah, producer, director. And I'd read some interviews about him, because I was doing some research on Knocked Up. We were hoping to cover it for Clips and Quips. I'd read that he often Googles himself. So I started the thing where every day I started writing about him in my blog and sort of saying that, you know, we're waiting for him to find our blog. And then today, I'm still not really positive if it's really him, but he wrote in. He wrote me an email.
Oh.
Saying that he got a big kick out of sort of, you know, our evil plan to get him to write in. I'm still sort of skeptical if it's really Judd Apatow, but
it
seems
good.
Legit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an email to me, you know, from his email address.
Yeah, you're definitely right. It's the internet. Anybody can do anything with that, but hopefully nobody would waste their time trying to pretend to be somebody they're not.
They would have had to, like, mask their email address somehow. Anyways, I'm just hoping it's Judd Apatow. I'll try to confirm it, because I'm actually interviewing Paul Rudd tomorrow. We worked with him on 3 different movies, so I'll try to get to the bottom of this.
Well, there you go.
Clips and Quips is winding down at the end of this year, and then I think I'm moving to the West Coast, doing a little Los Angeles action, and see what I can do over there, maybe do some more writing.
You definitely should download the podcast that I have of a show from James Felder. He was a TV show writer who teaches the class how to write a TV sitcom at NYU.
Oh, nice. I definitely will.
Yeah, and I got all the shows up, a lot of the recent shows on podcast there. And then I'll put this one up on podcast. And anything else that we should talk about, Boaz, before you go? I don't want to miss anything.
I think it's about it. Those are the highlights. I'm looking forward to spending some time in Portland, Oregon, my hometown, this summer. But
great.
Otherwise, it's been a pleasure being on Citywide 2 times.
I'm glad we got to meet and we got to talk. And, you know, I wish you the best of luck on the West Coast there. And thanks so much for joining us.
Well, I'll let you know how it goes when it's like, you know, Citywide distributed by PRI.
Yes, we'll definitely keep in touch.
Sweet.
Our next guest here on Citywide this evening on the final show that I'll be hosting is David Gibbs. David Gibbs is a theater publicist, and we worked together throughout my time here at working at WNYU, and you've helped me book guests. You haven't actually been on the show, so you're a unique guest for tonight, but you've helped me book guests going all the way back to Paul Bucock.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, his show on baseball and all that. I'm actually... My job now is working at MLB.com, so it's very symbolic in a way. But
I saw that, and that's probably why you were interested in seeing Paul's show, yeah, way back when.
Yes, yes, yes. So I want to thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. So first, just tell me what is life like as a publicist?
It's a lot of fun, actually. It's it's funny. It's my job. It's what I do full time, but it doesn't really feel like a job, which I feel really lucky about. You know, I get to work with a lot of great up-and-coming theater companies, and oftentimes I'm involved with people who are very close and very attached to the projects they present. So, you know, there's something burning there for them to either, you know, mount that particular play or to continue with their theater mission. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's probably the greatest job I've ever had. Other than performing on stage as a musician from time to time, which is a lot of fun too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've been on the other side of things?
I have, yeah. I originally started playing drums at the age of 12, so I played in many rock bands in New York City for many years, and actually that's where I actually first started to learn a little bit about PR. I was like the sort of motivated guy in the band that would type the press releases and, you know, get us on radio stations or in the magazines and things like that, you know, starting locally and then actually building up nationally in some cases. So I worked at on the music end, but I got a little out of music, studied acting for 4 years, and then started to act, and then did that for a bunch of years, and that's sort of how I segued into theater publicity. And just started to do more of the publicity and did a little less of the acting, and found it, like, just as enjoyable. And found a way to start earning an income and ultimately a full-time job as a publicist, so, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's really cool.
Great. Yeah, I know. You're always very friendly and always very willing to help out when it comes to getting guests on the show.
I feel that's the only way to be, and I'm appreciative of people like yourself who take the time to listen to what I've got going on and consider it. I mean, that's all you can really ask for as a publicist. You kind of put it out there, and some people will respond, and you have to not take anything personally, and go back to them maybe the next time if they said no on the next project. But hopefully if you put it out there hard enough and stay in touch and follow up with people, you're going to see some nice returns. And obviously, you want to get the client some placement, because that's why they're hiring you, obviously.
So would that be your advice to someone who wants to do what you do, is just be persistent?
Yeah, and I think important thing, too, with maybe to help people out there who are looking for a publicist if they're doing theater and music, is to make sure you find someone who can really put the time and effort needed into the project. You know, occasionally you'll hear some stories that, you know, that I don't like to hear, where, you know, we got lost in the shuffle, or, you know, it was a busy time of the year or something like that. I don't really buy that. I think that the publicist can get you a fair amount of stuff if they're really kind of working their tail off a little bit. You know, I mean, we're in New York City. There's a lot of stuff out there, you know. So I think it's just finding a publicist dedicated to what you're about and what you're doing, and who understands that, and it's just really going to follow through and do the job right.
Great. Yeah, I know. What else I like about what you do is, you know, like you said, the things that you represent are usually with artists that are very close to their project.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily mainstream thing, which is what we like here on WNYU.
I like the quirky and offbeat in general. But, you know, it varies. Different types of artists will you know, be doing different things. And I like working with a lot of off-Broadway theater companies. And I've done some off-Broadway shows that were on a little bit higher of a budget. And, you know, the off-off companies tend to be very passionate about what they're mounting, or there's some sort of mission with the company. And to me, that's really what sort of turns me on to maybe what they're doing or what that play is about. I really get drawn to that. That's what excites me, like, that it's really close to them, you know, and it's something that they're compelled to put up. And then in turn, you know, I'm looking for that sort of vibe off of them when I meet with them, you know, and first begin my relationship with them. That's important, that there's some sort of artistic integrity there.
Well, it's a great thing to look for, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I know you have a new project that you're working on. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, certainly. I'm working with a new theater company called Coyote Rep, who are comprised largely of graduates from the University of California at Irvine's MFA program. And they've got something really unique going on. They are producing original recorded sound play productions, sometimes referred to as radio plays. And they record them and produce them out of the WNYC studios in New York City. And what's sort of distinct about them is that they're really the only theater company out there dedicated to producing original recorded sound plays, or, you know, maybe what you'd call radio plays, while at the same time producing original plays on the stage. And actually, as of this moment, their second recorded sound play just opened up on their website at coyoterep.org. And basically use iTunes to download the play, and you can listen to the recorded sound play that way. And they are really striving to reinvent the role of modern-day repertory theater company. So it's kind of cool, actually. The play is called Patriot Act, an occurrence at Yankee Stadium. You're going to like that. And it's actually about Kevin Cogan, the guy who fell out of the upper deck at Yankee Stadium into the netting there. So you might want to give this one a listen, Darren, actually, because here we go again, Major League Baseball and baseball. Recurring theme here with me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm actually a Met fan, but I still can respect.
So I'm born and raised in Queens, New York, so yeah, you know, I'm a little partial to the Mets. But.
Still have the respect for the Yankees that win all those. We don't have one of those World Series.
You have to, right?
Right.
Of course.
Well, I'm definitely interested in downloading that. It's because it combines both not only baseball, but it also has theater and radio.
Exactly. So a little bit of everything. And, people are starting to catch on to these. I'm calling them radio plays now, but they're referred to as recorded sound plays. It's something kind of new and different. I mean, there's some radio theater out there on XM, I believe. There's a channel dedicated to that, but there's a lot of sci-fi, horror, and mystery sort of around this area of theater or radio theater. And what they are doing is they're sort of taking dramatic plays and plays with a sort of specific sound element and bringing that to their website. Actually, you know, just available through iTunes in that way. So check it out. CoyoteRep.org is the website. Yeah.
Great, David. So, I mean, I really want to thank you for being here on Citywide, talking to me about being a publicist and your new project, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
I look forward to that, and I want to thank you again. You've been really super kind, and it's always been a pleasure and very easy to work with you, so I wish you the best, and I want to say thanks again, and thanks for having me on. I really do appreciate it. Quite an honor. Thank you.
Okay, so my next guest here on Citywide is Ula Einstein, the abstract conceptual artist. Thanks, Ula, for joining us.
My pleasure.
We had a conversation a little while back about all your interesting art. Would you like to talk a little bit? I know you just recently had a solo exhibition in Dumbo. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I had that was my first solo exhibition in New York, and it was a really wide experience for me in terms of I really pushed the limits of my work and created installations, and at least four of them were where I had created all the work in my studio, but then it became site-specific so that I created them according to the space allotted, and I had really high ceilings and good lighting, so it was actually very fantastic. And all the works were very different, but they all dialogue with each other. They were very spare in color, very sculptural, and so it was a really exciting show for me with tremendous feedback and meeting wonderful new people. And I don't know, for my first show in New York, it couldn't have gone better.
Great. I know that I remember when you were on and you were talking about you were thinking of and hoping you'd be able to do a show in New York, and then you got to do it.
Yeah, within 6 weeks of us talking or something, someone came to my studio and then said, "Oh, I happen to have an opening in March," and he kept apologizing. It was at Safety Gallery, and the director was apologizing a few times for such short notice, but it's something I just couldn't say no to, and I'm thrilled I didn't. I've never worked so hard and so enthusiastically. And the work was phenomenal and seemed to really resonate with a lot of people. And the show was actually called Resonance. And I actually got the show the same day as our interview aired. So it was a full, rich day.
Oh, terrific. See, good things happen to guests of Citywide.
I guess so. And in the meantime, during that show as well, I had an interview, an online interview that was published on what is called Resolve40.com, and they published beautiful images of the work along with an interview that I spoke about my work, and people can still go there to look at, to read that if they feel like it.
And I know you have your own website, artula.com.
Yes, it's artula.com, and it shows a variety of my works on paper, sculpture, installation, and paintings.
Now, do you have any upcoming goals that you would like to let everyone know here on Citywide, or any what's the future plans?
I have two shows coming up. One will be a solo installation in Williamsburg on Bedford Street and North Fifth, and that will open May 4th, and then I'll be in an exhibition with a lot of my installation work and painting in East Hampton, which will open at the Surface Library Gallery on May 12th. And besides that, I'm just expanding the repertoire of my work and look forward to more shows and even museum exhibitions.
Right.
Because now, since this show where my work was so beautifully illuminated in this space, it gave me a tremendous opportunity to shoot the work in a way that I never can in my working studio. So yeah, I want to keep creating and hope to be inspired and just go even deeper in the work and expand my audience.
Now, one more thing before we go here, because I know I love your answer. Would you be able to describe your process as an artist?
Basically, my work is based on ideas, and then when I hear ideas that I'm inspired from, either from biology or nature or metaphysics, just shapes come to me. So I see shapes out of this, and so I create these abstract shapes that come from concepts that I hear about. So it's a very, very idea-based, and I try to go for this element of the work is cerebral, but it's very visceral. I mean, it has a very, even if you don't get the work, it has this visceral emotional impact, and that's always what I aim for, that tension between that my work is idea-based, but the ideas actually impact me emotionally, and so I try to create from that place.
I definitely want to wish you the best of luck with all your future art and all your future shows and everything. Thanks so much for joining me here on my last episode of Citywide.
Thanks so much, Darren, and I wish you all the best out there. Let's have a great time in the world.
And before I bid my final farewell tonight on Citywide, my final guest will be the amazing, blazing Tyler Fire, ladies and gentlemen. He's a daredevil, sword swallower, fire eater. He also happens to be an NYU alum. He's performed all over the place, and it's great to have him back on the show. So thanks so much for joining us, Tyler, again.
Happy to talk to you again, Darren.
Yes, it's great. I know. I know you've had news lately.
There's lots of news lately. The biggest news is that I married my new partner on Valentine's Day out in Las Vegas. Thrill Kill Jill and I got married by Elvis.
Oh, wow. And it was all broadcast and everything over the internet.
It was. We had a live webcast of the wedding over the internet. We didn't want to invite that many people. We tried to elope and keep it just the two of us, but the Washington Post actually broke the story by putting us on the cover of the newspaper, so we decided we ought to call our families and let them know first.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks, Darren.
And obviously what's been in the news lately is the Coney Island issue, and I don't exactly know what your feelings are on it. I know you told me they might surprise me.
It's funny because the real estate developments in Coney Island started coming to light right about the same time I was on Citywide with you the last time.
Right.
That's about when all of the developments started to come about. So, short story, as you may know, is Thor Equities is a major developing company, and they have purchased a large percentage of land in Coney Island. It's been rumored for years that there's development plans for Coney Island. A story broke in the paper years ago that was Disney has bought Coney Island. And the way these things happen is, an article comes out in, say, a small local paper, take like Courier Life or the Bay News, that gets all the facts, and it's picked up by AP and condensed down. So by the time it's published in Sacramento by AP, it just reads, Disney has bought Coney Island, or Thor Equities redeveloping all of Coney Island. But really, it's not that simple, and it's not actually the way it works in Coney Island. Coney Island works more like a carnival, or more like a trailer park, if you will. So you can buy a bunch of the mobile homes in the trailer park, but you can't buy the park as a whole. Coney Island is still a neighborhood in New York City. All those streets, the street that Nathan's is on, is Stillwell Ave and Surf Avenue. That's New York City. That's not for sale. Where the sideshow is on West 12th Street, and the entrance around the corner to the Coney Island Museum, those are West 12th Streets and Surf Avenue. Not for sale. The Cyclone's on West 10th Street. You can't actually buy Coney Island, but you can buy parcels of land within it, and that's exactly what Thor Equities has done. So, yeah, a large percentage of land has changed hands very recently, most of it just within the last year. So a lot of the big landowners are out. Norman, who owned the batting cages and the go-karts and the new mini golf course, all that, down on Stillwell, just down from Nathan's by the boardwalk, he sold. He owned the jumbo jet property. A lot of it has sold, and it sold in individual portions. The last time there was a deal this big going through, it's when Horace Bullard, the mastermind entrepreneur behind Kansas Fried Chicken, had a plan to redevelop all of Coney Island all at once, and he tried to buy all the land in Coney Island so he could develop it his way. He did it also through a company, not as himself, but he formed a company, a real estate company, that he somehow, he gave a Japanese name to it so no one would know that it was him. But Coney Island is like a small town. It's owned by many different people, the businesses within it. But, of course, they all know each other, even if they don't get along, and they do talk to each other. So word got out that Horace Bullard tried to buy everything, and the prices went through the roof because people figured, well, I don't have a valuable piece of property, but it's between these other two valuable pieces of property, so he can't do anything without buying my property for five times what it's worth. And that very mindset, while it has, in fact, slowed development of Coney Island, is the very mindset that's kept Coney Island a subpar amusement park for longer than you and I have been alive, Darren.
Definitely sounds like a lot more complicated than just Disney bought Coney Island.
Yeah, Yeah, it is. And there's definitely good and bad that'll come of it. There's good and bad that comes with redevelopment of change of all kinds, but especially in a town like New York City, it helps you realize right away that you cannot fight progress. And anyone who wants to stand in the way of progress, has got a hard road ahead of them, you know. People didn't want to change the cobblestone streets to asphalt, you know. People didn't want to change Times Square because of, you know, all the history that was in Times Square. I got to say, when I moved to New York, I was a big fan of taking my lunch hour at Times Square strip clubs, you know, and I miss it. But at the same time, I understand why it had to change, and Coney Island really needs to change. If you look at it as a family amusement park, which is how amusement parks make money, it just doesn't have the draw that any other family amusement park has. Tagline for Coney Island years ago used to be Playground to the World. You can still get it on vintage postcards. Coney Island, Playground to the World, as if people would come from all over to go to Coney Island. But now if you were to go to Coney Island and want to take your family from anywhere, just from upstate New York, say, not even from far away, there's no hotel you can stay at in Coney Island. The Shore Hotel, owned by Horace Ford, I believe he actually sold out to Thor Equities. That property sat abandoned for years and years when Horace Bullard's plan to redevelop Coney Island didn't go through because he couldn't get all the middle pieces of property. He kind of said, screw you, Coney Island. I'm just sitting on this property and not developing it because you guys won't get along. And everyone is waiting for it to be 1920 again. And Dan, it's never going to be 1920 again.
Well, what do you think the future holds for Coney Island?
Here's what I think about it. You know, it's all conjecture, and everyone has their own opinions on what's happening with Coney Island. As I figure it, Thor Equities is going to buy as much of the property as they can, maybe padlock it for a little while, much like Horace Bullard did, not redevelop it right away, force the remaining owners to sell, and with all the owners having sold, or at least enough that they feel they can go through with what makes financial sense as a development company, you got to look at it from their perspective too. You know, they're doing it for reason. They're not out to get Coney Island, but it's beachfront real estate that isn't currently making money, and that's exactly the way the city has got to be looking at this right now too. They're taking a lot of heat every time things change, but really, how much tax revenue is Coney Island bringing in to the city of New York versus what it could be as beachfront real estate with a famous name? So just say Thor Equities buys it, they sit on it for a few years with it bringing in no money at all, they go back to the city and petition for a zoning change. Right now it's all C7 amusement park land. You can't build condos, you can't build stores. The furniture store across the street from the Sideshow was forced to close when they started enforcing the zoning regulations. But a few years from now, Coney Island paying no taxes of any kind, Thor Equities or any owner petitions the city for a zoning change and say, actually, this parcel of land that's making you no money, we can put a shopping mall on the bottom, condos on top of it, still keep the Coney Island facade, the Wonder Wheel is landmarked, the Cyclone is landmarked. Coney Island USA, which runs the Sideshow in the Coney Island Museum, has received a $5.5 million grant from the city to purchase a piece of property so that they can remain in Coney Island. It's not like Coney Island is going to disappear, but it is going to undergo a drastic, drastic change. I think elements of it will still remain, that there probably will be housing, there will be shopping and food courts of some kind that all mass developments have. It will be like everyone says, don't make it the new Times Square. Times Square still kind of looks like Times Square used to from photos of old. It'll still kind of look like Coney Island. There'll still be a roller coaster and a Ferris wheel there, but there's going to be a Starbucks there, and there's going to be high-end condos there. This is just my conjecture, but, I mean, if you look at it logically, something's got to be done, and all the people who have owned the property for the last 20, 40, 60 years haven't stepped up to the plate and made the changes to make Coney Island make sense as a business-owning property.
Well, it definitely sounds like you know exactly what you're talking about, and I would take your word over anybody else's.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not buying property in Coney Island.
Well, Tyler, that's about all the time that we have, though. But I really want to thank you for joining us, and I wish you the best of luck with all, everything that you do.
Thanks, Barry. Go to Coney Island this summer before it all changes. It's still a great, magical place. Enjoy the heck out of it.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Darren. Nice talking to you.
For more information about Tyler Fire, you can visit tylerfyre.com. And he'll be on tour this summer with the Brothers Grimm Sideshow as they go on the Ozfest tour. All right, here we are live in the studio. This is Darren Levy. This is it. This is the last show, Citywide. I have some thank yous that I'd like to announce here. First and foremost, I want to thank all my guests. The show would not be possible without you, obviously, and all the publicists that worked with me and helped get them on the air. I want to thank all the security guards that helped keep everyone, including myself, at WNYU safe, the security guards at 194 Mercer Street, 721 Broadway, Reuben and Second Street dorms. I want to thank my friends, Jeff, Danielle, and Ib, who were very, very nice to me while they understood that I was busy a lot of the time, though. I have to thank all my listeners. That's you folks. And all the podcast listeners and fans. Stay in touch, darrenlevy.net. I mean, it's just crazy to think that there are just so many of you all around the world out there. I want to, people at WNYU, I want to thank the whole news crew. It's been a pleasure being your news director. You've all been great. I want to thank Alex Schoenfeld, and I want to wish good luck to Arash and Emily, who hopefully will be working on Citywide this fall. And, of course, the best associate news director in the world, Mike Arroyo, who really helped me along here. He was definitely a huge help, and he did a great job. I want to thank people in the journalism department, Professor Ludlam, Professor Stern, Professor Stone, and Professor Murillo, who taught me a lot. Also, other people at WNYU, Brad, Momo, and Max. And, of course, the people that helped me get off the ground here at WNYU, Hatch, Sarah, Ryan, Katie, and Lance, and Zoe Corneli, who hosts Citywide before I did. She just basically handed me the show and said, here you go, do with it as you please. And I really appreciate her trusting me like that to take on her legacy. And, of course, Charlie Crumshow and Heather, who's one of Heather standing right behind me, who is always here, who never, and I think it really symbolizes something about WNYU, that we have very dedicated student staff, because they never, at 8 o'clock, they were here to do their show right after Citywide, and they, never kept me hanging, never made me worry, and it was, it was great having them on after me, and all the DJs that came on before me, including Arnie, who was great to talk to, and very nice guy, and of course, my mentor, and a lot of people's mentor here at WNYU, Daniel Blumen. Obviously, words cannot describe everything that he did for us here and everything he did for me, and he taught me everything I know about radio. And then Jenna Marie and her mom, who really supported me throughout my years here at WNYU and in college, and I wouldn't have been able to do without them. And, of course, last but not least, my parents, my mom, my dad. I love them very much. They are my biggest fans. They gave me the inspiration and the car rides and, everything. And I would not be the person who I am today without them. So that's who I wanted to thank. And the other thing that I want to leave you folks with is, whenever I end the show Citywide, I always like to ask my guests, what do you want the audience to walk away with you after you listen, see one of your shows, watch one of your movies, read one of your books? And, they each had a different answer. And what I would like someone to walk away with them after they listen to this show or any Citywide show is just that you understand that everybody who's on this show calls himself an artist. And behind all the promotional messages, there's also an inspirational message that artists are just so happy with who they are. And that's basically part of the definition of being an artist, just being happy and helping your community and helping yourself. And with that will be the last time I will hear that music for a long time. That's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments to citywide@wnyu.org. Let me know if I should continue my podcast. And visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. Next fall, the Citywide will be back with new hosts and new guests and brand new, a lot of things. The whole news department will be revamped, so you will hear a lot of new things on WNYU. And stay tuned. Up next is experimental acoustic music with Heather on Outside. And yes, thanks so much for tuning in. And from everyone here at WNYU News, have a great night. Peace!